Welcome into the Seminole Wrap Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Peller, and happy Thanksgiving week to you and your family. The holidays forcing a little different setup to our show this week as Juan stepping out. It's been some family time, but it also brings John back, the great John Marchand, and I, of course, going to guide you through this as just the two of us through the pod as we comb through all things Florida State, Boston College, Dan Mullen firing. What a fun time in Gainesville. I'm also going to get John's thoughts on the Miami program, my picks, and of course, Thanksgiving week also means it's rivalry week. So Florida State versus, I guess, Dan Mullen's former team in Gainesville. If Mike Norvell won't say it, maybe I won't say it either. Florida, there I said it. I'm sure many of you will be sharing the dinner table with those Gators fans this week. So good luck with that. Of course, somehow it's your program that's in a better place than theirs. Just one year removed for the Gators being legitimate playoff contenders into December. Just amazing from Dan Mullen, really. So inspiring. Now we've got a battle for bowl eligibility, but before we get to that, we'll focus on the Noles. They're now 5-6 on the year. Victory at Boston College, 26-23. Dominant first half leads to a nail-biter in the second half, but they got it done. And part of that, of course, was subpar officiating and an offense that stalled out. But, John, anytime you can go on the road in conference and get a win, you got to be happy with it. And FSU was able to get it done here.
Oh yeah. I definitely have to eat some crow here. I think I was maybe the only person on Tomahawk Nation who picked FSU to lose. it did almost happen. Thanks to the refs. It was a solid game. Anytime you can go on the road as an underdog and make an opposing fan extremely upset about taking a pair of scissors to some grass, you got to do it. every time, little souvenir. So no, it was fantastic. I thought, the year long or season long improvement of this defense has been a lot of fun to watch. Maybe perhaps sure my favorite storyline of the whole year, really. Right. Especially once we saw against Jacksonville State, we had a lot of discussion and talk and words like rock bottom being thrown around, things like that. The guy's not giving effort. For the players is what we heard, right? For the players to say that they wanted Adam Fuller, defensive coordinator, to smash the rock after the game. That was a pretty, pretty wonderful moment. I know he thought so. This defensive line, man. They get after it. This is not the Boston College offensive lines of old. I still kind of am in that mindset from, 10 years ago when these BC offensive lines were just fantastic, routinely putting guys in the league. Clearly that's, the days of Adazio are long gone. That was absolutely dominant performance. I also have to give a shout out to Akeem Dent. I think he made ACC defensive back of the week. Got himself an interception. The whole experiment with him last season at corner was kind of always a head scratcher. I'm not going to ding the staff too much. You're trying to figure out these guys. COVID really, really screwed with their evaluations. But obviously his growth as a safety this year has been a lot of fun also to watch. I guess that's my bottom line about my takeaway for this defense. Is the player development, right? We talked before about how Florida State still struggles with, some talent. Obviously, Kalen DeLoach is coming along, Akeem Dent. This defensive line all been reworked through the portal. Cannot give enough accolades to Jermaine Johnson, Keir Thomas, Fabian Lovett, Robert Cooper. Now even Malcolm Ray has been coming on the last couple of weeks. So the player development is something we haven't seen at Florida State for the last five or six seasons. And since the end of Jimbo Fisher's time. So that's incredible to see, especially doing this on the heels of the Miami game. This program is obviously going in the right direction. Again, we talked about a couple weeks ago, progress is not linear, but this is, you have to be excited, right? You have to be excited.
Absolutely. And you mentioned all the names, and I've got all the stats to back you up. So we'll start with Akeem Dent. As you mentioned, ACC DB of the week. You had three tackles, a pass breakup, and of course the game-winning interception there at the end, which, say what you will, I mean, he kept the guy from the ball and went up and got it. That's a game winner, seals it. That's just, like you said, the improvement at that position is so great over the whole season. But, you know, if you're really going to pinpoint a spot, it's got to be the defensive front. And I just had a stat load away from me, and there it is. I found it. Dan Siegel, hopefully I'm saying that right, ACC content. This one I saw in our Tomahawk Nation chat earlier. Leading ACC defenders and pressures from week 12, Keir Thomas, miles and away from everyone else, with 13 on his own. Second place, 7. It just also happens to be Jermaine Johnson. So the two of them combined for 20 pressures. That's more than any other defense in the ACC, and it's just two guys on the same team. Obviously, Thomas was the big star this week with the 7 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 5 hurries with 2 more that probably could have been sacks. He was right there. I mean, they were a wrecking crew, and I feel like it almost became where you watch – if you're Boston College and you sit down and you watch the tape from the Miami game and you say, we have got to block 11. If you see 11, send a second guy over there, and you just let 4 eat you alive on the other side. It's one of those where it almost felt like they overcorrected to make sure they didn't get chewed up the other way.
Yeah, absolutely. They really did dominate Boston College up front. I was a little worried about this. What was his name? Jerkovic. I apologize if I mispronounced his name. Jerkovic. I honestly have no idea. Jerkovic. Okay. I honestly have no idea. Anyway, he destroyed Georgia Tech last week. I was a little concerned about him. I know he'd been hurt. The Boston College guy, Patel, I talked to from BC Interrupted, had thought that their 4-game losing streak right in the middle of the season was all because he had hurt his wrist and was out. And, you know, and then he comes back from injury. You're like, okay, well, you don't really know what he's going to be. And then he just does whatever he wants to the Yellow Jacket defense. And so I was a little concerned, right? But Florida State dominated them up front. They annihilated this kid, hit him every play. I honestly believe too, with a couple of the guys in my Nation chat, that I think that kid might've been concussed. They hit him several times, hit him hard. He was obviously, shook, missing wide open passes. He just didn't look the same. So hats off to the defense for being the physicality they brought, the attitude they brought. It's something that we haven't seen at Florida State in a long time, that the pride, like, you know, Norvell 7 weeks ago, what was it or whatever, after Jacksonville State had talked about setting that Florida State standard, making these kids practice that way every single day. You know, this is what we're going to be. You're not going to accept anything less. And it's obviously worked. We thought early in the season, especially after Jacksonville State, you know, maybe there's still some issues with the culture. You know, we talked to Willie Taggart coming in, had to change it. Then we said the same thing about Mike Norvell. Now it looks like they really have. They've, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, football teams don't have their issues. Who knows? And there could be something around the corner. I don't know. But for right now, as of this moment, it looks like Mike Norvell's fixed the culture at Florida State, and that the program is trending in the right direction.
And as much as we talked about, like you mentioned, the rock bottom after Jacksonville State, I mean, we had some people calling for Fuller's got to go, and you know, down the list, Dillingham doesn't know how to call plays, and who's calling the plays? What's wrong? It's quickly turned around with the growth of the defense. So that side of the ball seems at least progressing, and you've got to be happy with where they're at this point. Obviously, you're going to lose some of that talent going into next year. But when you look at the offensive side of the ball, if I'd have told you that Jordan Travis threw the ball 34 times in this game before it, I'd have told you they lost. Either that or he hit a couple down the stretch and they stole it at the end. I just didn't think that would be a recipe for them to win. I don't think it really was what they wanted to do, but the way that second half started to slip away from them kind of forced it. But they still found a way to find enough offense and be explosive enough in the first half to put it away early.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, look, after the Notre Dame, Jacksonville State, or whatever the other game was, I can't even remember now. I thought that, you know, because we were told all offseason, Jordan Travis has developed as a passer, right? We're going to see him take that next step. I thought after the first couple of weeks of the season, we had been sold a bill of goods. I didn't see it. You know, part of that too is like Milton going back and forth. You know, Travis didn't really get the, you know, the reps, but it's pretty clear now. Obviously the sample size is large enough. And I can't discuss enough his performance against Boston College this weekend. He was because that's the other thing that gets me, just like what you're talking about, right? This offense has to be explosive in order to score. They have to. And if defenses sell out to stop the run, or, you know, they're having a little bit of success shutting down Florida State's passing game, like what happened against Miami at the end of the game. I said in the Slack group, this team is going to need a deep pass in order to win this game. They're going to have to get that explosive play through the air. And they did it. Travis, they got it. They made it happen. But in this game against Boston College, I thought Travis was fantastic. He threw several dimes, especially deep down the sideline. That's something I've been really, really impressed with him this year. And again, once you get to a sample size like this, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 games, you can't ignore it anymore. I think he's got, what, 15 touchdowns and one interception on the season. He still frustrates me a little bit. You know, sometimes he doesn't want to throw in rhythm, especially in the intermediate passing game. But there's no denying that he can read and throw deep balls down the sideline right in a bucket. You know, he should have even had another one to McClain later in the game that I think McClain lost in the sun. But Jordan Travis can throw. He makes good decisions. And his growth this season, especially as a passer, has been very fun. And I can't talk enough about it again, because the talent at receiver still isn't very good. It's still one of the worst, if not the worst, in the ACC, right? But in the offensive line of pass protection, you know, you got some injuries there. Darius Washington went down. So the fact that Travis is doing what he's doing, or, you know, did do against Miami and Boston College, with not a whole lot of talent around him in the passing game, is spectacular. You can win a lot of ball games if you're explosive on the ground and you don't turn the ball over. And I think Mike Norvell's found his guy to do that, his kind of approach to the game. It's working right now. But I do have to point out, I know we were talking about this right before we started recording, Malik McClain's touchdown catch. Can we talk about that?
We sure can. I was ready to give you, I literally wrote down, let John talk about Malik McClain's touchdown.
I'm so excited for this kid, man. Him going to high point that ball, because it looked like that throw might have been a little long, right? Out of the back of the end zone. I thought the DB at first might have had good position, but McClain just goes up there and he says, this ball's mine. And it's just, it was unbelievable. I'm real, real excited about that kid's potential. I think he's already the best receiver on this team. I've said that several times this season. I don't think he has quite the experience of other guys like Wilson. I know Keyshawn Hilton's been out a couple of weeks, a limited role, but I really like McClain, man. I think he's the future. I think he's going to be a leader in that room for several years to come. I can't wait for Norvell and Dillingham and hopefully Dugans to get some more talent in there with McClain, you know, kind of develop those guys, get a little bit more explosive in that room, get some guys who can separate a little bit more often. But, man, just seeing, again, player development, McClain, hopefully coming into form, maybe we'll see kind of a breakout season from him next year. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's only one catch for 15 yards. So, I mean, the consistency still needs to be there. But, I mean, like you said, it was a great catch to go up and high point that ball in the back of the end zone, which you said it looked like it was overthrown. The defender was on his back outside shoulder, and he just went up and just took it. I mean, just, you know, you want to use the word snatched out the air, because, I mean, that's exactly what he did. And talking about those deep, longer pass plays, where we've really seen the growth, what you knew you needed when you had the rushing game they had, was finding those 20-plus yard passes. I mean, I was just looking at it a second ago. They've only had 34 on the season. So it's not like they were super explosive. They're middle of the pack. But, I mean, if you just look at the passes this week, you had 41, 26, or just passing longs, like Ontario Wilson, 41, McDonald, 26, Douglas, 22, Trayshawn Ward, 21, Jayshon Corbin, 20. The Malik McClain pass was only 15, but he caught in the back of the end zone. So, I mean, it was really like 25, 24. I mean, they're finding those 20-plus passing plays with more regularity as the year goes on. It's a shame that they have one, maybe plus one game still to go. But I really can't believe we're sitting here from where we were in September. Of course, Wake ended up being a lot better than I think anyone anticipated. Right. But to sit here at 5-6 and 4-4 in conference, I mean, hats off to them. I think, you know, you talked about the progression and the growth, and I think it's another one of those examples where everyone was ready to you know, fire Norvell. I don't know if everyone was, but there were many who were saying, look at his record versus, you know, what, boy, name just fell out of my head, Willie Taggart was in his time at Florida State. And I think you've seen, as time has gone, having the ability to let those guys grow, coach, just, I mean, we've talked about it all year. They don't have the talent level behind the starters to really be that competitive, but they are competitive. And that's all you can really ask is give me a watchable product that every Saturday has a chance to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and like we talked about, I mean, this program's obviously, remember I wrote that article a couple of months ago that it was way too soon to talk about firing Norvell. I mean, look at, I mean, what's happened. They just needed time. They still need more time, right? This program still needs more time, but you're absolutely right though. Going from 0-4 to 5-6, you have a chance to beat another rival who looks to be on the downswing. You do that, you go to a bowl game. Even if you don't, it's a disappointing finish to the season, but you still won 5 games. You still showed clear improvement over last season. Yeah, the Jacksonville State thing still hurts, right? Because you would be bowl eligible already. But at the same time, like Juan said a couple of weeks ago, and I think you did too, was if you don't lose to Jacksonville State, you may not be where you are right now, right? Sometimes you have to get worse before you can get better. And, you know,
it's the butterfly effect. If you change one thing, I mean, who knows what's different?
Right. So I'm just, you have to be thrilled, I think, at this point, even if you lose the UF game with as dysfunctional as Florida is right now, and that state of flux of their programs, that we'll talk about in a second, but even if you lose, you still have to be, this is a successful season for Florida State, right? We said this was the lose a little year. They've actually won a couple of big games, right? They beat North Carolina as an 18-point underdog. They beat Miami as an underdog. Now they go on the road to Boston College and they win there as an underdog. Yeah. So they did have a couple lose a little games, right? A couple one score losses. But the other thing too, about the passing game that I wanted to mention this about the passing game, the explosive plays was, I've been so impressed about how clutch they've been, right? Maybe they've only had, you know, 30 something this year, but that big pass to, I think it was Ja'Kai Douglas in the Notre Dame game, like we just talked about a minute ago, the big pass in the Miami game that they had to have so they could score and come back and win that game. They found a way to get it done when you had to get something, right? And they like to bring it right down the wire and try to give us all heart attacks. But hats off to Jordan Travis. That kid's a gamer. He's a warrior. I know he's not healthy. I really honestly don't think he's been 100% healthy, even maybe only one game or a couple series this whole season, maybe not even that. So he's obviously the starter going forward. I think you have to be really, really happy about that. I know they're going to bring in, hopefully they can keep AJ Duffy, but with Chubba Purdy gone, I thought maybe going into next year, they would compete for the starting job, but with Purdy in the portal, that's done. Travis is your guy. And I think Florida State could do a lot worse than him.
Yeah, absolutely. He is a good to great college quarterback. I don't want to, you know, think, I don't want anyone sitting around thinking he's winning the O'Brien or anything, but I mean, he's a very, very good college quarterback. He's very fast, great with his legs. It gives you the ability to play with that eye candy in the backfield. And if you miss him, he's gone. And that is the explosive element that you love to have in college, especially on a team that needs that explosive element. And when you've got that at the quarterback position, it opens up so much more for you. It's how, you know, we've seen Louisville succeed with that for years, with Cunningham and back to Lamar Jackson. That's basically kept them relevant, having that element.
Right. I like, obviously Travis has flaws, right? But I think,
yeah,
I think if you improve the talent around him, right, get a little bit better pass protection, maybe an offensive tackle in the portal. Maybe you can recruit some more talented receivers, maybe get one out of the portal that can contribute right away. I definitely agree with you. I think that you could see Travis become an upper echelon conference quarterback. maybe in the top four or five quarterbacks in the ACC. He may already be pretty much there or close to it. So, and the ACC's got a lot of really talented quarterbacks too. That's, I mean, Van Dyke's turned out to be pretty good. Pickett is ridiculous. Howell, you know,
Armstrong.
Armstrong. So it's a tough competition, but I think if you put a little bit more talent around Travis, I'd love to see how far he could take this team. Again, he still does some things that frustrate me, but you're right. You know, he changes the numbers on offense. He makes you explosive both in the run and pass game. And I'll be really excited to see what they do with them next year.
Yeah, and then look, I don't want to overhype where next season goes. I mean, if you look at the five wins, you've got a three-point win over Syracuse, a three-point win over Miami, a three-point win over Boston College, and you can easily say one bounce in all three of those games. Maybe you're only 2-9, but it hasn't gone that way. And so at the end of the year, when you're talking to the recruits and you're talking in that realm, you can sit there and say, we're 5-6, we're 5-7, or we're 6-6, 7-6, 6-7. I guess we find out this week against Florida, but before we actually get to the game, I do want to go straight to the state of the Florida program, because I asked on the pod 2 weeks ago to you and Juan and said, is Dan Mullen coaching for his job? And at that point it was, well, no, they fired Todd Grantham and I forget the name of his offensive line coach that Juan had at the ready, but they fired them and that's the scapegoats and we'll move on. At the time I said, he's coaching three games for his job. And I said, he has the ability to make me look stupid because they're playing Samford, Missouri, and then obviously FSU, which if you're a Florida fan at that time, you're sitting there going, check, 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 three down the row. And we're sitting at 9 wins at the end of the year. Well, that didn't work. Dan Mullen narrowly loses to Samford. He does lose to Missouri, gets clowned by Eli Drinkwitz. If I got the name right, I'm sorry. It's Missouri's coach. It's just not worth it. But I mean, it's just a tremendous fall from grace for Dan Mullen, and he's already out before the year's over. And I don't think anyone really could have expected that, especially late September when they had a 2-point loss to Alabama and everyone was willing to crown them just on the losses. One of college football's best because they almost got the tie. And I think we've learned maybe Alabama isn't quite as good as we thought. And obviously Florida isn't. John, I want to lay this one at your feet before you come in and deliver your thoughts. So we're recording this Monday night during Monday Night Football. It's November 22nd. So last year's first college football playoff rankings, because they started the year late, came out November 24th. Might not have been the first. I think it was the first. I remember correctly from I'm looking at my notes now. But whatever. You get the idea. November 24th, Florida is 6th in the country at 6-1. They lose to LSU. On the infamous thrown shoe game. They lose to Alabama in the SEC title game when they fell after losing LSU. I think they only fell to 7th or 8th, still had a shot, outside shot at the playoff. They could beat Bama, couldn't, out. They get beat by OU and are 5-9 since that start. 5-9. Hard to believe from where they were sitting, number 6 in the country, not even 365 days ago. And I wanted to put this one on you. Last one, I said 5-9 since that game. The five wins, FAU, USF, Tennessee, Vandy, and Samford. You got a rental win, three rental wins, and then Tennessee and Vandy, who are both basically the SEC East's rental wins as it's built into the schedule every year. That's just, I mean, what a collapse at Florida.
Yeah. Are you saying those ones aren't impressive? I'm just kidding. So
USF might be the best one.
Oh my God.
I kid.
I'm trying to collect my thoughts here because I have so many.
They obviously lose Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney guys. Well, I mean, Trask isn't playing in the NFL on Sundays, but you know, every week you're seeing Pitts and obviously Toney's playing right now for the Giants. And you know, these are guys who are NFL caliber players, but if you're recruiting like you're supposed to, this type of fall doesn't happen.
I don't disagree with you. Because I guess where my head's at is, it's obviously 100% on Dan Mullen. I think, you can have a bad year, especially after going to, you know, conference championship game. You can have a bad year and still keep your job, right? It shouldn't be 1 year, you know, burns you, but it was how Dan Mullen, the things that he said and did this year, you know, with the criticism, he brought this on himself in that way. He basically forced the administration to fire him. This is why we talked about for weeks that he looked like a guy who was trying to get fired, which I don't think is a great career move, especially, you know, for a guy who flirted with the NFL and appears to want to go to the NFL. It's not really how I would go about getting an NFL job or any other coaching job. But he looked like a guy who did not want to coach there anymore, was not interested. I guess the issue with the recruiting, though, is the bottom line, right? I think that what he had built there was, like you said, a house of cards. Once you lose some first-round, second-round talent, he didn't really have the talent behind that to reload, for example, right? Because recruiting's out there. So the house of cards, it was already coming down, right? I think, to your point, it was already crumbling. And I think that Mullen had proved himself this year through the things that he said that he was not going to be able to be the guy to fix it. I mean, I'm not complaining as a Florida State fan. As a college football fan or X's and O's fan, it's kind of – I mean, he's a good coach. He really is. But the recruiter's not there. He's pretty goofy. And I think that those just did him in the end. I honestly – it's kind of baffling how he approached and treated things, you know, laughing after losses, blaming the players for it, saying he didn't want to talk about recruiting when we all know – the recruiting is a 24/7, 365 job. So yeah. I don't get it, to be honest with you. I didn't think that, I mean, 99% of all coaches get fired, right? But I didn't think that his tenure would end like this. He was the coach I was most afraid of Florida hiring at the time. But again, I'm not complaining. The whole program's been dysfunction. There's articles being written about how dysfunctional it was. Like you said, we talked a couple weeks ago. I said that his tenure there was untenable because of these things that I'm talking about. I still thought that Florida was going to let him finish out the season. So the fact that they wouldn't even let him do that, you know, woof for them.
Yeah. Well, and it, to that effect, it seems like they either know who they want next or who they think they need to get next if they're moving so quickly, though I don't know. I mean, you're not announcing it in the next 5 days, and there's no reason you couldn't have gone back channel conversations to find the guy you want. I don't think Mullen, with the win over Florida State, if that were to happen, had he stayed, I don't think you couldn't fire him at that point. I think to me that speaks to enough off-field issues. And we're not talking Urban Meyer type off-field issues. We're talking the lack of recruiting, the lack of what seems like focus inside the program. You know, we're not talking scandal here, but the things that go into winning and a winning culture, where I think the athletic department was looking for that excuse to do it, where you could get universal agreement that he should go. Because if he does win, that there, I just drew my pen, but there could be a conversation around, okay, sure, we went 6-6, but like you said, we were in a conference championship last game. Maybe Emory Jones didn't come on like we hoped, but you know, one more, let's give him a year and see how it goes. And I think there had to be enough behind the scenes to say, okay, this is a problem beyond what else is missing on the field. And I do think to the rumors of him looking to the NFL last offseason was enough to rub Florida boosters and the important people over there enough the wrong way to say, okay, if he's willing to get out of here immediately and we've got a chance to just get rid of him now, let's just get rid of him now. Of course, it continues to pay exceptionally well to be a bad college football coach to all the buyouts across the country. But I mean, I'm looking at this from ESPN right now, and it's, you know, that they lost another top 300 recruit today in Isaiah Bond. He's the fifth decommitment since October 20th and the second since Dan Mullen got fired. I mean, you know, I will get to the candidates right now in a second, but it's just, it speaks to the issue that whoever they do hire has to come in and scramble to repair a a roster that is seemingly and surprisingly and almost impossibly, like you said, like a house of cards that just collapsed. And there's a severe lack of talent around the program in the spots that we're used to seeing from Florida.
Yeah. Right. And that's my thing is I think if Mullen had treated the season differently and said different things than what he had said throughout the year, he'd still be the coach, but yeah. He didn't. And again, I don't know if it was hubris or the fact that he just wanted out or whatever the deal was, but to your point, I do think that we probably going to hear more about how dysfunctional that program really has been behind the scenes. Cause like you said, that is a good word. This has been a pretty spectacular meltdown for a program that seemed last year that it, until Marco Wilson threw his shoe, that it was fine.
Yeah, so, it was top of college football.
Right. So I'm just, you know, I'm happy. A little surprised from where I was before the season. I'm not surprised that they lost to Mizzou and that he got fired. But if you'd asked me 12 weeks ago, I would have said no way he gets fired after this year. So even like you said, especially after he fired the two Grantham and the offensive line coach, I think it was Hevesy. He fired those guys basically to save his job. Everyone said, okay, yeah, you know, now he's obviously going to get another year, but he's got to turn this thing around. But then, you know, like you said, whatever happened behind the scenes, and then you lose to Mizzou, and then that was that. So very, very fun. Like I tweeted on the other day, the ESPN article about Florida State being in a deep, deep hole, stemming back to Jimbo Fisher, came out almost a year ago this week. And yet now Florida State is the most stable of the big three programs, almost exactly a year later. So that's pretty fantastic. It's pretty exciting to be a Florida State fan. You hope that Mike Norvell can take advantage of it. Again, Florida State's still trying to climb out of that hole, but if you ever wanted your program to try to catch on an upswing, it would be as your two rivals are apparently crashing into the dirt.
Yeah. And I'll jump in right there. I mean, to look at Florida and just, you know, you could give me one, you don't have to go through the whole list, but the candidates who seem to be emerging and this one, I, you know, as a Louisiana guy, I feel like has picked up very quickly from what I can see is Billy Napier at Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns down there. He's had a, I forget what conference they're in at this point. Are they in Sun Belt still? Whatever. They, you know, he's got a perennial top 25 team somehow. Former Alabama assistant Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, Iowa State's Matt Campbell, Mark Stoops at Kentucky. Somehow Bob Stoops, the former Oklahoma coach, is named. Luke Fickle, but you know, the intriguing thing there is Cincinnati appears potentially playoff bound if the ball keeps kind of bouncing their way as we go towards the end here. And then that throws in, are you waiting until January to actually make that hire? And then Alabama offensive coordinator, former Penn State head coach, former Texans GM, if you want to call him that, slash head coach Bill O'Brien as the list. Obviously they're competing against LSU, USC, Virginia Tech, maybe Miami. I'll ask you about that in a second, but is there a candidate on there that you think they're leaning towards or that you just kind of have an interest in?
Yeah, the three names, I think in particular, one is definitely Napier, right? Former Clemson assistant. He was at Alabama for a year. You said, Louisiana Raging Cajuns, I think head coach right now. He could be a problem, although maybe LSU, you know, tries to go after him with him being already in the state. Yeah. The one that I think would scare me the most, but also has the most boom or bust potential would be Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin would scare the crap out of me, just like Dan Mullen scared the crap out of me at the time. Obviously, it didn't quite work out for Florida the way that they wanted, but Lane would scare me. His offense is extremely fun. I don't know if you guys have watched Ole Miss this year, but that, even go back to FAU, that, you know, Lane Kiffin, again, another graduate of Nick Saban's School for Wayward Coaches. his rehab program, he goes to FAU, blows the doors off there, gets the job at Ole Miss. Obviously, Lane seems a little bit more mature than he was with his Tennessee midnight USC escapades back a few years ago.
Whatever happened with the Raiders.
Yeah, you know, that crash and burn thing. So Lane seems more mature. He seems ready for a big-time job. UF hiring him would scare the crap out of me. Although, again, there's the big potential there for it to blow up in Florida's face, which would be also hilarious. Then I think Luke Fickell, yeah. Luke Fickell, I think, would have an extremely high floor at UF. By the way, I try not to watch the playoff shows because it'll just make me mad.
They're made for TV.
Right. That's exactly what they're made for. So I try not to pay any attention to them. However, I will go ahead and say that I think the committee are a bunch of cowards for not putting Cincinnati in, because what's the point? You know, if you're going to go to four, like if you're only going to pick two, which I'm actually okay with, if you want to go back to two teams, that's fine, whatever. You'd pick obviously the most talented teams, right? But when you're going to do four and a team is undefeated, like Cincinnati, I don't really care that they're a group of five. Put them in. Let's have some fun, right?
And they went on the road to Notre Dame and handled them pretty well.
Right. And Notre Dame, they're not elite, but they're a really, really good team this year. So
they're sitting top seven, I think it is. I mean, yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, they'll be top six or seven when rankings come out tomorrow.
Right. A solid top 10 team. So put Cincinnati in. Stop screwing around. Let us, you know, even if they get blown out by whoever the number three team is or four or whatever, I don't care. Put them in. So if Cincinnati doesn't get picked in the top four, I think it's even more of an argument for 12. I think that'll be inevitable because people are going to be extremely upset, including myself. I think going to 12 solves the problem of it diluting the regular season, but I digress. So those are the guys that scare me. Bill O'Brien could be interesting with his NFL pedigree. But really, I think if I'm Florida, I go after Napier, Kiffin, or Fickell. What about you?
Yeah, I think it seems like the name, and obviously I'm an LSU guy, so the names are all the same, right? I mentioned LSU, USC, Virginia Tech, all kind of in the same pool. It seemed like Virginia Tech moved off Fuente. The word almost immediately was that they were firing Fuente to come get Napier. The problem there being, it seems like Florida did the same thing. Was the way that the smoke around Louisiana seemed to change real fast was last week. All I was hearing was, Virginia Tech's going to come get Napier. I don't think LSU is interested just on that end, because I think it's that little brother thing with LSU and UL where they just don't want to even acknowledge that UL has a coach who might be good. It sounds incredibly stupid and petty and stupid, especially if Napier ends up being one of these elite coaches, but I don't think they ever want to give UL that satisfaction. But I was surprised at how quickly the winds changed from Napier's Virginia Tech bound to Florida being a possibility. I rolled my eyes at Bill O'Brien as a potential LSU coach, and same when he seemed to come up for Florida. But as I rolled off his resume, he did do a really good job in rebuilding Penn State post Paterno scandal, Sandusky scandal, and the what seemed to be not the death penalty, but relatively close up there. I remember those teams being competitive, and I think he gave Franklin the base to be successful there that's kind of kept him afloat from where they were. So that could be concerning as well. I'm still trying to figure out how Bob Stoops' name is coming up for jobs, but
I don't consider Bob Stoops a serious.
No, I think that's one of those he appears in the thing. And on Kiffin's front, I've long since pushed for Kiffin to be the LSU job, because as easy as offense is seemingly to find in college football nowadays, LSU could not find it. So the one year we've actually had an offense, we were like the best team in college football history. So I have pushed for him to go there. I think he's a fantastic hire because in a weird way, it almost feels similar to, and I don't know if this comparison makes a lot of sense. I might've been too young to understand it fully, but to like almost like a young Tiger Woods versus a Renaissance version of Tiger Woods, where it seemed like he was Mr. Know-it-all, can do it all, hair on fire, can just do whatever he wanted as a wonder coach, and kept failing upwards because of it, got to the top of the ladder and collapsed. But, you know, kind of like when Tiger came back the second time, it seems like he's found like, oh, wait a second, I can just do it like this and it makes more sense. Like more composed. I don't need to be the hair on fire, climb to the top of the mountain as quickly as possible. Just take care of my stuff and I'll be fine.
Right.
Almost like an older basketball player too. Or maybe I'm not as quick as I used to be, but I know now I could just kind of slide my hips a little bit and take a charge without actually having to get around you or get in front of you. It's that type of growth from Kiffin.
Well, it seems, though,
that Florida's moving quickly. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, right. I think that was part of like what you said, because even, you know, we've seen in the early signing period, right? You fire a coach after the end of the season, you only got 2 weeks. You know, you hire them, and then it's a week and a half, 2 weeks before early signing day. So, yeah, I think we might start to see coaches get fired before the end of the season now a little bit more often, kind of give them a little bit more cushion to try to find somebody and do that. But for me, Kiffin to LSU would easily be the most fun outcome for me, right? Because I don't mind LSU as a program. I think Kiffin would do well there. I think it would be a lot of fun to watch. And also, he's going to poke Florida. Instead of poking Florida State.
We play Florida every year. Yeah.
Right. So that would be, for me, the most fun outcome. If I had to guess, though, based on what happened with Dan Mullen, I almost think that their athletic director, Strickland, might go after someone safe. If that's the case, the top three guys would be James Franklin. I could see that. Luke Fickell or Bill O'Brien, right?
Yeah.
He may try to do some guy that he thinks with a high floor who might be safe, who he knows has been a head coach for a long time, like Franklin, and has kind of kept it steady. Although he's not very good. He's not good. I mean, I don't think Franklin's ever going to win a national title at Penn State. But, you know, he's not collapsing like what Mullen did. So, yeah, realistically, I think that's what they're going to do. But I'm also kind of wish casting there that Kiffin ends up at LSU, because I think that would be just amazing. As a college football fan perspective, just it's what I want. I, as a Christmas present, just give it to me, okay? Because we all need it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like regardless, UF appears to be moving very quickly to fill this. Is what the tea leaves seem to be. I don't know if they're trying to race Virginia Tech to the Napier hire or what it is, but the word out there seems to be they're moving quickly. From what I'm hearing out of LSU is they're planning to move very quickly when the season's over, because I've seen Ogeron talking originally. He was like, well, I might coach the bowl game. And then yesterday and over the weekend, he was saying, well, you know, I think we'll have a transition before then and the new coaching staff. So it sounds like, you know, over the weekend into maybe this time next week, we're seeing a lot of new coaches. I mean, for now, Florida's new coach is Greg Knox, who's their interim coach. And he talked today about crazy 24 hours and how emotional it is to see, you know, Dan Mullen fired out of there. But I honestly, until me and you sat down for this conversation, had never heard of Greg Knox. So I really don't know what to expect from Florida on Saturday. I know it's a rivalry game. We've seen Emory Jones play basically every snap last week. Anthony Richardson, I remember after the LSU game when Anthony Richardson looked fantastic, the conversation was, why hasn't Dan Mullen been starting Anthony Richardson all along? He's clearly the better guy. And it seemed like coming out of last year, the hope was Emory Jones would be that quarterback, and he just hasn't. It's one of those weird scenarios where obviously Greg Knox has the opportunity here to kind of just do whatever the hell he wants, quite frankly. I mean, he's got one game to coach Florida in a rivalry game at home where he's still a favorite. I don't think if he loses, it's going to hurt any future prospects he has of getting a job. So, I mean, that is at least moderately scary, you know, and a team where you have really no idea what to expect and a coach who really has nothing to lose. But I think if you're Florida State, you're in that same boat. You really don't have anything to lose. You know, a 5-7 season is still successful from where you started. And quite frankly, a win is a huge boost to look around the state of Florida and figure out and see exactly where you are. I'll get to it in Brian's bets coming up. I'm going to make my pick on this game, but I don't know what to make of Florida. I really don't, as they've now basically just given up on this season, which they still have a game left.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really don't know what to expect from them either. This is what I'm guessing, right? So we've seen teams who have their coaches fired. Interim guy steps in for Florida State not too long ago, Odell Higgins. I think that Florida is going to come out and play hard, right? It's Florida State. Yeah. You have a chance to go to a bowl game. Bowl game means, you know, a trip, some free stuff, you know, a little bit more time with teammates, extra practices so you can get better. I think that Florida is more talented than Florida State, obviously, still. And I do think they're going to play hard. However, I don't know how Florida is going to game plan for this, because you're right. They lost their head coach. They lost their offensive coordinator. That's really what Mullen was. They've lost their defensive coordinator, Grantham, Todd Grantham, who got fired, and their offensive line coach. Right. So I don't know who's going to game plan for Florida for this game, or what kind of game plan they're going to come up with. Who knows what they're going to throw at Florida State. But I do expect the Gators to come out and play hard for the pride with the bowl game on the line. I do think that if FSU is able to get up a couple scores, that we might see Florida quit. I think if Florida gets up a couple scores, I do not expect FSU to quit. I think, I think they're going to play hard for Norvell for 60 minutes. He's now will accept nothing less than that. We've seen that. So yeah, I don't know what to, I really don't. But that's my guess. I think that they're going to come out and play hard, but if FSU can get up a couple scores, we may see the Gators just go ahead and quit.
Yeah. And you know, like we said, we really don't know what to expect from Florida. This actually cracked me up. I saw it on Twitter earlier. It's from @AG_Noel8387. If you're out there listening, I mean, thanks for tuning in. I don't mean to clown you like this, but it's just hilarious. It's a tweet directly at Adam Fuller, and it says, "We should be ready for the possibility should Greg Knox decide to play Anthony Richardson, (15), instead of Emory Jones, (5). They look different with AR. Congrats on the win, BTW. Beat Florida." I mean, I just love the idea of the fans being like, "Hey, man, watch out. They might play that other guy," like the DC wouldn't know. It's just – it's one of those, we're in such a weird position with this game that they don't even really, it's like, "Hey, by the way, DC, make sure you're checking out that other quarterback." But yeah, it's a weird spot for Florida.
Well, but let me,
if you're,
sorry.
Go ahead. If you're a Florida State fan and you want to feel good about anything, Norvell is not letting them go in heads hanging. Obviously you're on a 2-game winning streak, but he wants it. Like, you could tell in the way he was talking during his press conference today, they want this game. I mean, it's huge, like you said, for the extra practices and beyond. But he was talking rivalry. And as I mentioned in the opening, he wasn't even going to say Florida today. Like, he didn't even say Florida, didn't say Gators. I mean, here's his quotes. "If you don't get up for this one, go somewhere else." Quote, I love the rivalries. It's what I've been looking forward to. Very first day of fall, I talk about two games. I talk about Miami, and I talk about this one. He referred to it twice as this one, which is hilarious to me. But he wants it. And I think with the momentum around Florida State and the lack of momentum around Florida, I really wouldn't be surprised to see a pretty strong Florida State contingent at this game. And you know, if that can carry over, and like you said, if you can jump out ahead early, it really wouldn't shock me, despite being a worse team talent-wise, to go in there and really put it on them if you're able to jump out ahead early.
You think Norvell wants it. I want this game. I want this. I mean, look, Fuller, this defense has been, they're playing at a very high level for their talent level right now. So you have to give a lot of credit to Adam Fuller there. I'm not going to go there and touch that tweet. I will say this though. This would be one of my favorite wins in program history if they beat the Gators and go to a bowl game. It would have been sweeter if Dan Mullen was still the coach, but I'm it doesn't really change it that much for me to start 0-4, right? And to win, I don't know, it was at what point, 5 of their last 7. Now I guess it's 6. Is it 6 of the last 8 now? Or I mean,
six of their last 8. It would be 6 of their last 8. Yeah. To be 0-4, you have to get 6 of their last 8.
So to start 0-4 and win 6 of your last 8 and to go to a bowl game, and to deny your rival that same, you know, bowl game opportunity would just be unbelievable. It would be an incredible, incredible season, a giant cherry right on top of the Fantastic Sunday that would be the season. I know I wouldn't shut up about it all offseason. I'd be unbearable on Twitter. So maybe I do have a little bit of common with the guy. I'm just kidding. But I mean it when I say that I really, really want this one. I know Novell does. I hope they get it. I know these kids are going to want it real bad after beating Miami. To have the chance to be in-state champs after starting 0-4, are you kidding me? And it's definitely, definitely doable, right? I think with Florida Open is a 2-point favorite in Gainesville. So, So if
that's a coin toss on a neutral field. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if it was in Tallahassee, I think Florida State would be favored by a couple of points probably. So absolutely this team can do it. I really, really want them to, but who knows, you know?
Yeah.
One turnover could make UF quit. You just don't. You don't know. And I haven't really gotten a chance to watch Florida as much as I wanted to. A lot this season, a lot of their games were on TV at the same time as FSU. But, you know, Emory Jones doesn't scare me. Anthony Richardson doesn't scare me. The defense.
Jacob Copeland is the receiver that's kind of like the watch out for him. But obviously I watched the entire LSU-Florida game and he was pretty non-existent. And that was when, you know, I know everyone will play like, well, Derek Stingley, well, LSU was missing 6 DBs, I think, for that game. And even then, he was still non-existent.
Well, like if we could say that this Florida State team is not the same team that played Jacksonville State, I would argue that this Florida team is clearly not the one that played Alabama.
The one that played Alabama.
And almost won, right. Are they still capable of that? Maybe, but they don't have any coaches either. So when your running back coach is your interim head coach, again, I expect them to come out early and play hard, but after that who knows. But I really, really want this one would be pretty sweet. But I can't emphasize enough that if FSU does not get the win this weekend, it's still a very successful season. Right.
Yeah. Well, all right, I'll pin you down before we run into Brian's bets. Last week Juan gave me 20 seconds per pick, so I'll do 20 seconds for you. Florida State +2.5 at Florida, what you got?
I don't really know how this betting thing works.
If Florida State wins, then you're fine. If you pick Florida State, Florida State wins, you're fine. If Florida wins by 2 or less, then you win. Or if Florida wins by more than 3, you lose.
I mean, I'm taking Florida State. I think they're going to win this game. I could say, I don't know what the over-under is. I'm going to say FSU wins something like, I don't know, maybe 26-21 or something, or 26-23. Well, just like the Boston College score, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have this. I don't have the over-under written down. I've already locked it in for this week. Florida State +2.5 is one of Brian's bets for the week. That'll be in my Thursday into Friday, my Friday morning article I write it Thursday night. Florida State +2.5. I've already got my units locked in on that one. If you're one of my fellow degenerates on the Hard Rock app, here in Florida. Last week, I went 2-2 out of 3, 2-1. I gave you Florida State +2.5, locked that one in early. I think it moved to 3.5, which wouldn't have mattered anyway. They still won. Or no, I think it slid from 2.5 to 1.5. It didn't matter. They still won. It was plenty fine. I thought about a money line on that one, but I'm a coward. If you wanted to go money line Florida State this week, you might as well. I gave you Louisville Duke the Thursday night game as an over because I didn't think Duke could hang with Louisville. It was 60.5. I said the only way they're getting there is if Louisville scores 60 themselves. They got pretty damn close, and then Duke got a couple of late touchdowns to push that one over pretty quick. Since Louisville had like 40 first half points, that was a real problem. And then I gave you Ohio State -19.5. That one was a smash and a half. We could have just thrown money at that one all day. Ohio State absolutely embarrassed Michigan State. But I thought the writing was on the wall with that one. Ohio State has the best passing offense in college football, and Michigan State has the worst one. And that's not exaggeration. They're number one and number, I think it's 124 or whatever it is. Like Michigan State was allowing 350 yards per game before this, and they had almost 400 against them in the first half. So I'm actually going to go back with the same formula. I'm giving you the Thursday night over. This time I'm actually going over. Last week I think I gave you the under. I'm going Ole Miss, Mississippi State Thursday night, 61.5. I've got that one locked in. I think that's going to be a scoring fest. Lane does not care in any way, shape, or form to play defense. And God knows Mike Leach is going to throw the ball 850 times. I'm sure Malik Polk will score a touchdown, but I doubt they're doing any time touchdown scorers in that game. I've got Florida State +2.5, which I already gave you. And I'm going back to Ohio State. I'm following the same exact formula as last week. I think Ohio State is on a collision course with Georgia for the championship game. I think the loss to Oregon earlier this year was everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And they still had a chance to win it there at the end. I feel like they turned the ball over every time I was looking up. Their receiving core is unbelievable. I mean, the three guys, I mean, I'm a Saints fan and I sit around and I talk about, I would just like to have one of them on the Saints today because they're better than any receiver the Saints have. That's not Michael Thomas, but Michael Thomas hasn't played in two calendar years at this point. So yeah, I mean, that receiving core is ridiculous. I mean, with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and is it JSN? Yeah, they're ridiculous. And I just don't think that Michigan is going to be what slows them down. I mean, 8.5 is a large number for that rivalry, but I think the Buckeyes are the best team in college football. Heading in the exact opposite direction before we do get out of here, John, I do want to give you one chance. Miami, the program, obviously AD Blake James out. What do you think that means for Manny Diaz? We kind of talked about it a little bit last week where Juan said he still thinks to him that means Manny is going to stay. I kind of shared that I'm my only really connection to Miami is I'm a Levitard show listener and executive producer Mike Ryan Ruiz over there is a booster with the program who's been kind of funneling out information. And he was saying that Blake James was going to be out 2 months ago. And that came true. And he's been saying for the last week and a half that Manny Diaz is out next in his thoughts. Do you think the Blake James move to a new coach is a possibility? Is that another, we've talked about that transition class issue for them. Where do you see this playing out? Obviously, you know, maybe the lack of connections there, but what are you expecting?
Right. Well, yeah, I definitely don't have any inside sources. Well, before I heard that, I was going to say, I think Manny would stay.
Yeah.
Because if you fire him, this is my thinking. If you fire him, Miami would be the fifth, maybe sixth best program, somewhere in that range available. So you're not
LSU, USC, Virginia Tech, Florida.
Yeah. Maybe someone else comes up, but who knows?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be more.
Right. So you're the fourth, fifth, maybe sixth best program with a job opening. You're not going to get the quote unquote splash hire that you want if you're a Miami fan. All of that speaks to keeping Manny Diaz.
Yeah.
Especially firing Blake James, the athletic director, because normally it goes, you get a new athletic director and then you fire a coach, right? That athletic director, the new one, would get to hire whoever he wants. Miami's not in a good position, I guess is where I'm going with this. They're not in a good position because either you fire Manny Diaz, you're not going to get the coach that you think you can get, right? You're going to have to roll the dice on somebody, you know, maybe an up-and-comer, or you try to pick someone who's kind of decent, maybe a guy like Mark Stoops or something like that. I think Mark Stoops is a good coach, but no one's going to consider him a home run hire, despite the fact that he turned around Kentucky and built a pretty respectable program. But the issue with it is if you keep Manny Diaz, he's basically a lame duck, right? You know he's going to get fired. You're going to get destroyed in recruiting, already worse than you already are, because he's already overly reliant on the transfer portal, which it works for Miami. I get it, right? A lot of kids, you know, they want to go somewhere else. Miami's a cool place. You get to start
probably
right
already
away.
Over 21.
Yeah, so I get it. That relying on the portal more than other teams will on average, it'll probably work for them in the long term, but it's still supposed to supplement recruiting, and the recruiting there is not good. But if you fire him now, then again, who are you going to get that's going to? I mean, Miami keeps saying that they want to be committed to football, but I haven't seen it. And talk is cheap. They say they have the money. They say they want to do it. I think all the players being involved and whatever I heard about that, all former alumni players, it's kind of a clown show.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think as dysfunctional as it appears that Florida is right now, I think Miami's in a real mess. They say all the right things about spending money and really being committed to football and hiring someone, but to be honest, I just don't see it. So, again, it's a pretty exciting time to be a Florida State fan. Hopefully Mike Norvell and staff can take advantage of the current landscape and maybe kind of use it to catapult you a little bit faster than we thought. that they might, you know, we were talking about 2023, 2024. I still think that's the general timeline here, but you might be a couple games better than what we had thought, right? Instead of getting 8 or 9 games in 2023, 2024, maybe now we're talking about 9 or 10, something like that. So I'm pretty happy and ecstatic that Miami and Florida are they're definitely struggling on the struggle bus right now. But we'll have to see.
Yeah, it seems like they're both taking themselves out somehow. Yeah, the thought process on what he's been saying on the Miami AD and head coach hire is the, and this sounds so, not even University of Miami, just City of Miami, that the AD will have a spoken agreement with a head coach as part of the hiring process. They'll hire an AD who already has an agreement with someone to be the head coach. I mean, if there was anything more Miami than a guarantee from a guy that he's going to have the thing you definitely need, that's going to be there. Don't worry about it, bro. I got it. It's that. I mean, what a perfect way to go about it. So we'll see how that one plays out. We'll obviously probably get clarity on Manny Diaz's job by next week as well. I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about on the coaching carousel. And of course, are the Noles going to be bowl bound again? Florida State, Florida, it's a noon kick on ESPN. I think I saw that RG3 is on this game. So buckle up for another one of those. He's going to say Monstars about that defensive line about 800 times. So have fun with that. Enjoy Thanksgiving with your families. We'll be back here next week to recap it all. And that's a wrap.